Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. This is the LA Steel Show. I'm Leo, and tonight we're going to continue our reading of the Illumination from the Ajna Yoga series. And last week, I didn't cover very much. Covered about five or six stanzas, but they were very inspiring. And what I wanted to do to start the show off tonight was to read the last stanza that I left off with last week. And it's number 7 of the Ajna Yoga, of the Illumination. And anyway, that's, I'm sorry, I had to take a phone call right in the middle of my program. Anyway, I wanted to start with number 7. And if you just let me go on for 1 second here, I'll make sure I'm on. Yes. And the laws of appearance of teachers, this is number 7 again. The law of appearance of teachers coincide with the plan of the whole culture. Karma rolls up like a scroll, and signs of the departing earthly power begins to flash out. For those who know the future, it is hard to observe these departing flippers. Like yesterday, stands tomorrow, and the step is measured not in feet but in 3-year periods. Now that was what was very significant. That those of us who think ahead, think a year or so or 2 or 3 years ahead, thus is obtained the stride of giants, to whom it is not frightening to step over whole centuries. Thus does the psychology of the spirit reach the earth. For those overstriding the span of 3 years, it sometimes seems that they do not live. A specifically propelled aerostat sometimes seems to be motionless because its apparent inertia does not correspond to the surroundings. So what they're saying is that, you know, you look ahead 3 years, I guess, at a time, rather than looking ahead much further, because the 3-year period is the wave. That's what I'm picking up from this anyway. That's the best period of time to look ahead, to plan, have a 3-year plan. 5 years or 10 years is too far, and you lose consciousness, you lose sight of the whole, or you lose sight of the present. As he who carries the knowledge of the future can walk boldly even upon shaky stones. Success is then when the consummation is beautiful. Success is then when one can set forth upon a new journey. The wish is already a part of the fulfillment. Courageously advance to light. The parting is the forerunner of the meeting, and St. Sergius uses to say, you must depart, otherwise you cannot meet again. I wish to recall the call to the high priestesses. There was one group which was brought into an exalted state by means of chemical preparations. I believe I read this as well. There are also low grades of conjurations and mechanical whirlings. Then began the inward concentration of the threshold of sleep, or the concentration upon a brilliant object. And the knowledge which came from within, without any apparent conditions, was considered the highest. So the path of the world evolution proceeding under your eyes requires different conditions, and the time is coming when psychic forces must be strongly restricted for the sake of the spirit. For the last decade, the lower strata of nature have taken possession of the lower psychic manifestations to such an extent that a danger to evolution is arising. You can progress not by the way of the lower strata of phantoms and embraces, but through cooperation with the higher planes. Now about the circles of receptivity. Circles of keen sight proceed centrifugally, and those of receptivity proceed centripetally. And from symbols and dim outlines, they advance spirally to sharp facts, to clear call or clear audience, clairvoyance, clear understanding, clear achievement, and clear knowledge. One must understand that into the category of the call, the fact does not enter, because in this category, a precise action can be misunderstood and will not only increase the danger. I do not wish to imply anything demeaning about those who need the call, but a fact in their hands would be like a loaded gun given to one ignorant in handling weapons. Of course, the boundary of the call is quite relative, but when one can pass over the circle of understanding, we greatly rejoice. Each circle is like a caravan. Of course, a whole caravan carries more than a single horse, yet on the other hand, a single horse can delay the whole movement. Shyness or missteps can upset the march. Therefore, the concepts of achievement and clear achievement differ very distinctly. It is possible to check the flash of the achievements, but not the fire of clear achievement. The flame of clear achievement may flicker from the effects of cosmic vortices, but it cannot be removed from the head. You will understand why a symbol as an identifying sign is necessary up to a certain degree. Later on, it becomes unbearable and begins to fall off like a husk. Like the music of the sphere, the all-existing resounds along the way of boundlessness and non-reoccurrence. As a bird flutters and then flies, so does a word gush from our furnace, and afterwards it can only be confirmed. Occultly, the first moment is more important than a repetition, but when one can catch the boiling of the furnace, it glows more powerfully than a command. I have already told you that the mother of the world conceals her name. I have already shown you how the mother of the world veils her face. I have already made mention about the mother of Buddha and Christ. Indeed, it is time to point out that one mother of both lords is not a symbol but a great manifestation of the feminine origin, in which is revealed the spiritual mother of Christ and Buddha. She it was who taught and ordained them for achievement. From times immemorial, the mother of the world has sent forth to achievement. In the history of humanity, her hand traces an unbearable thread. On Sinai, her voice rang out. She assumed the image of Kali. She was at the basis of the cult of Isis and Ishtar. After Atlantis, when a blow was inflicted upon the cult of the spirit, the mother of the world began to weave her new thread, which will now begin to radiate. After Atlantis, the mother of the world veiled her face and forbade the pronouncement of her name until the hour of the constellation should strike. She has manifested herself only partly. Never has she manifested herself on a planetary scale. One may cite many examples when even high magi left behind them unexpected consequences and a desire to find support in the lower strata of matter. Such perversion could be termed the channel of the intellect and can arrest for a long time the communion with other worlds. So in other words, whenever we, even the great thinkers and the great magi, departed and went underground, basically, or went into themselves, into perversion, that could be termed the channel of the intellect and can arrest for a long time the communion with other worlds. Depending on your mind, I guess, depending on if you depend on your own intellect to get you through and shutting out the rest of the world, that won't work. Now people mechanically search for the already spiritually predestined. Very interesting. Teachers, the future epoch will be reunion of the spirit and intellect. The course of the planets permits the hastening of the communion between the worlds, and the development of the human spirit will proceed along new ways. The luminaries permit the acceleration of the course of humanity. Now, more about the mother of the world. And paragraph 12. The mother is beauty. The world is sacrifice, self-sacrifice. Precisely by these two fundamentals are the gates open. The bridge between the planets and the shortening of race cycles rests upon those two fundamentals. Why the path of gradual progress if a single flash of illumination can lift one over the boundaries? The one whose path is too far off world usually meets a messenger upon departure from Earth. The liberated one tells this messenger whether he prefers to embrace a new path or would return to help the Earth. Of course, many prefer a new path, but there are some who decide to continue the path here. Verily, it is better to await a while in the vegetable kingdom and bypass insects. One can even avoid a whole planet. So once you've reached that point in your enlightenment or in your evolution, you can bypass the vegetable planet, the Earth. You can see and you know, you have a knowing of a greater and higher place. And likewise, you'll gravitate to that place. And I believe that's what we're destined for. And we do that now as we rise to different levels of our own consciousness and create new realities for ourselves. We develop new channels of communication, not only with other people, but with other entities. Even though we don't know it, we may reach a level, or I should say, open a frequency that will allow a greater communication from an ulterior source, a different thought process, a different higher intelligence, or in some cases a lower intelligence. But nevertheless, we're constantly opening these frequencies as we go along. We do it subconsciously, basically. We do it through sleep. We do it through awakening. We do it through religion, spirituality. We do it through meditation. We do it through drugs. We do it through alcohol. We do it through many forms of drugs, mushrooms, hallucinogenics, you name it. Whatever we do, we're opening up new channels. There are many, many ways that humanity has found to accommodate themselves and allow those pleasurable or not so pleasurable lines of communication to be open. So I'll continue. Just now, during the grave days of the approach of Mars, when the lower past currents are disturbing, we think only about the future. The unprecedented deviations of planets help the awakening of consciousness, and the space is becoming dense, and the rays of Mars will be drowned in the light of the mother of the world. And this is fascinating because just a few years ago, now you remember this book was written in 1925, but we had a recent, about 2 years ago, 2007. Mars, I think in the late, it might have been 2006, but at least 2007, Mars was very close to Earth. You could see it in the night sky. You could see the red planet, and it was quite amazing. And it mentions it here. Now more about the mother of the world. Just now, during the grave days of the approach of Mars, the lower past currents are disturbing. We think only about the future, and the unprecedented deviations of planets help the awakening of consciousness. The space is becoming dense, and the rays of Mars will be drowned in the light of the mother of the world. And it was interesting that when Mars was closest to us, we were in the thresholds, not even the thresholds, we were in the midst, actually, of the war, the height of the war, not only in the war in Lebanon by the Israelis, but we were at the height of our surge in Iraq and problems in Afghanistan. And around the world, it seemed like conflagrations were going on everywhere. And that was supposedly due to the orbit of Mars coming so close to Earth, and Mars being the planet of war, and from the ancient Greeks. But Healer, number 14, it says, Healer, tell the ailing ones that the use of wine diminishes by half their chances, that the use of narcotics takes away three-quarters of their vitality. Certainly in my pharmacy there is no place for narcotics. Before using my medicines, one must spend 3 years amidst prana. M. Moina has left many magnets on earth. Therefore, I say, my path is easy to walk. The work toward cooperation with the highest planets demands that on these planets abide harmonized spirits and conscious work. Usually the quest is from below and the answer from above. Higher, the more unity. The created state of Earth's isolation must end, and it must be finally brought into the predestined circle. Otherwise, not only the Earth, but also Mars and Saturn will fall behind in development. Why do only a few go to Jupiter when the atmosphere of the Earth is so encumbered? Good question. I didn't know anybody did go to Jupiter. But one wishes to say, dear travelers, look upward. And if instead of clinging to the illusions of Earth, you wish to fly farther, then your wings will grow. Instead, you have encumbered by the same miserable hovels the whole astral plane. The same slander, the same illusionary smoke, but you forget that your phantoms fume malodorously. I'm not sure if I know that word. But your phantoms fume malodorously. And the rays of the sun are dimmed by your feasts of dullness. Empty shells create empty shells. But imagine if the ghosts were to strive toward the creation of a beautiful movement. Then the rays, instead of only being disinfectant, could be transformed into rays of enlightenment. Actually, thought creates beyond the earthly limits. Therefore, learn to govern the thoughts. And I guess that's what we have to do. I mean, that's what I'm trying to do. You try to look ahead, and you try to look at a greater vision of reality than you are now existing, if you can. And you project that thought. We all do this stuff, but you project that thought and see yourself at that time, at that moment in time, the way that you wish to be. And we can see that. And we can say that in 3 years' time, here in 1 year's time. We'll be here in 6 months. We'll be wherever we want to be. In 1 year, in 1 day, in 1 minute, 1 hour, we'll be somewhere else. We do that all the time. We say, gee, I have to be at work in an hour. And what you're doing is you're preparing your mind for that and transforming yourself through your own vision of being in a certain place at a certain time, say the next hour or 2 hours, or for many people say in the next 8 hours or 10 hours, we will be at work again. We will be somewhere in an office or somewhere in a building or someplace in a factory or someplace somewhere, wherever we do our work, or behind a desk at your home, but somewhere in the next 12 hours, people will be going to work. And so they're thinking of this. So they'll go to bed at a certain time so they can wake up refreshed and get themselves ready and be out the door and in their car and driving to work by, the designated time. So what you're doing is you're actually creating each minute of each day in the future. I have to be here at a certain time. I want to be there at a certain time. I'd like to be there and back home by a certain time. You do this all the time in your mind, and so you're creating these things, these places, and these destinies. So if we take that to another level, say, I'd like to go to Jupiter today, I guess. I'd like to go to Jupiter, and I'd like to see what Jupiter looks like. And I'd like to be back in an hour so I can have time to do my other things. But let me go to Jupiter. If we all knew how to get there, we all think, well, we have to take, a spaceship or something to get there, but maybe we don't. Maybe all we have to do is close our eyes, meditate, visualize Jupiter. We all have pictures of it. We all know what it looks like now. But what's interesting is back in 1925, there were no pictures of Jupiter. There were telescopic pictures, maybe, but faint, very faint, and very poorly for pictures of it. But nobody really had any real high-intensity picture like we have today of what Jupiter looks like. Jupiter is a multicolored, it's I didn't believe it's 10 times larger than Earth, and it's multicolored, I think it has one big eye on it, a big area on it that I've seen from pictures, and nobody seems to really know. I guess it's a big crater or something, but whatever. I'm transporting myself to Jupiter already. I was just there looking at a picture of Jupiter, I guess, in my mind. So we can go anywhere we want to go, and see anything we want to see, really, in our minds. And there'll be a time, there'll come a time, not in too distant future. Supposedly by 2012, we'll have we will have evolved enough to be able to actually transport ourselves to wherever we want to go, physically transport ourselves, through our consciousness. And they say we'll be able to do that. But let us go back to this. For consciously, for a consciously developed spirit, the period of sojourn on the astral plane could be limited to the interval of 40 days. But variously earthly conditions have prolonged this time to an interminable period. The misery and grief of those who are carried away from earth binds them there too. The best instance of this is found in the biblical legend about Lot. For a new life, they walked out of the city, and only one condition was imposed upon them: and do not look back. But the wife of Lot looked back and bound herself to earth. Religion says, he who does, who goes to his Father will dwell with him. He who goes to the angels will dwell with them. And he who goes to God will dwell with him. It means that he who has ordained for himself the utmost progress arrives at the best attainment. Therefore, the best bidding to the one who departs from earth will be, hurry, without looking back. What about the dear ones? But the higher you ascend, the better and closer you will see them. Of course, the cause of the delay is usually in the last remaining near ones. Therefore, the abbreviation of the sojourn on the astral plane depends upon a proper cooperation. The higher up, the more pleasant the stay, and on the border of the mental plane, the spirit can rest, because there the spirit is already subject to lofty attractions. But one must consciously avoid the lower strata. It is necessary that an explosive impulse of the consciousness propel the kernel of the spirit upward as far as possible. Therefore, the moment of transition is so important, for in it one may dispatch oneself to the higher strata. Once the lower strata is contacted, it is very difficult to rise afterwards. If the condition of spirit permits, it is far better to use the last flash of the nerves emanation for flight. Thus, the lower strata will be more sparse. It is important to dissolve the atmosphere of the lower strata so that it will not press upon the earth. And cooperation from above and below will give the speediest results. Transition without consciousness has been correctly noted. It is easy to assist in this. I beforehand, there be strengthened the desire for lofty flight. Then the emanation of nerves acts most automatically. Very helpful are prayers about the wandering of the soul. The one thing wrong in them is that they reiterate about rest, whereas it would be better to stress haste. Everyone should read and remember this, for it will not only help the individual, but also advance the world plan. So in other words, we shouldn't pray for rest, or we shouldn't rest to pray. We should continue. We should continue our thought and make haste in our plans so that we can quicker get to where we need to go. And I think that's pretty wise. Just checking. We're now at the part 9 of the illumination. The manifestation of labor for the future will transform the present. If people would understand that only the future exists, cooperation would approach. There are two kinds of knowledge, one expressed in words, the other an exact one realized by spirit, but not to be put into words. One cannot even explain in words how this understanding arises, but it is truly wondrous. Our experiments and flights bring straight knowledge, and if the spirit's subtle body prevents its penetrating farther than certain spheres, the illuminations of the spirit contacts the most distant radiations of the cosmos. It would be stupid and cruel to try to transmit by rough words the light of knowledge. It would be as ridiculous as are the absurd conventional terms. I can whisper one thing that you, foreseeing the possibility of knowledge through the window of individual flights, are correct in revolting against its belittlement. I consider that the miracle of nature's spirit can be explained. Their main property is elasticity. Their form depends upon the aspiratory conditions. Falling into the focus of human sight, they are sucked into human form. Men will see them in human shape, and animals will see them as animals, because They have no shell. I attest that whether the forms are fearful or beautiful depends upon the reflex of the nerves. The potentiality of the elements is such that it is always ready to respond to nerve reflection, and thus to doubly reinforce our sending in a definite pattern, in a definite direction. One should not think that the elemental spirits are our brood. In other words, they're not. Elemental spirits aren't frightening, or they aren't our brood. Their manifestation may be likened to the spark at the moment of contact with a tense reservoir of dynamite. The consciousness of this spark becomes kindled upon contact with the human spirit. Of course, their grade varies, as does the intensity of the dynamite energy one can evoke mechanically the intensity of this energy, but we are against the magic because it disturbs the regularity of the waves of the elements and is full of repercussions. One can use this energy outside of the usual earthly conditions. The rays can bring the waves of elements into balance. Of course, you also make use of them, but as long as this action is from spirit, it is less dangerous. It is easy to transform many factories into focuses of magic. True, it is difficult to transmit an ordinary word, the cooperation of the elements. Thus, the dynamo and the conjured circle both have a scientific basis. However, people at present work so zealously in the minds of evil that it is inadvisable to give them access to close possibilities. The collision of the two principles is unavoidable, and the sooner, the better. So, I guess what I see here is that we're constantly being sucked into the third dimension, into the natural, into the miracle of nature, basically. But we have to understand, and he states that the main property is elasticity. In other words, we expand and contract. We have a remarkable flexibility. And falling into the focus of human sight, they are sucked into human form. Interesting. Men will see them in human shape, and animals will see them as animals, and so on. So, spirits are sucked into human form. This is we are. And if you believe we're an incarnation, we, our spirit is sucked in to a human form, and then that form grows and is born and becomes us, where we become newly born again to experience whatever that may be, or to give to this life, give to this earth, give to this planet something better than, something more than it had before. Or this planet will give us, as sojourning spirits, that needed experience of reality, of physical reality, that we must endure in order, or we must live through in order to reach a higher stage of evolution in our spirit, in our spiritual path. So, it's not unusual to believe that, it's not unusual that we could possibly have lived hundreds or thousands even of lives over the many millennia. It's very possible that all that people that are living today And why there are so many people living today is because these are the final incarnations of these people, the final reincarnation, the final karmic move, the final, who knows? I mean, whatever we're here to achieve, regardless of how old or young we are when we die, we were here to achieve a certain level of spiritual consciousness and appreciation for the afterlife that we may not have had before we incarnated. I don't know. I'm just wild guessing here now, but it seems to me that the reason we're here, based upon what this book is saying, is that we are a new spirit. We are new. We do come in and we become renewed by this earthly transformation. But then again, we know that we're here for a destined time, and we're here to learn, and we're here to struggle and through this period and do the best that we possibly can, given the circumstances of our lives, and getting through that. No matter how horrific it may be, or how pleasurable it may be, or how mundane it may be, our search is, our eternal search, perhaps, is that, to find new experiences, to experience something new, something thrilling, something challenging. I don't know. But I'm drawn to think for this moment about Barack Obama, for instance. Somewhere in his journey, life, he developed a vision. Either someone gave him that vision or he developed it on his own. But he saw the possibility, or believed in the possibility, that he could one day become president of the United States. Somebody gave him the encouragement. But nobody would give you that encouragement unless you yourself had it in you and wanted it, and wanted to achieve it, and was going to find a way to do so. Impress your teachers, impress your employers, impress the people around you, strike up a loyalty and a sense of pride and determination and a vision for to achieve something great, and to be around somebody that can do that must be a thrill in many ways. Because they are not feeding, but they are feeding you. They're giving you the support that you need to say, here, I'm creating this for us. I'm giving us a chance, and I'm giving you a chance, and I'm giving this country a chance to do this, to straighten itself out. I'm going to try like hell to do it. So it's kind of like, I guess we can look at it from that standpoint, because regardless of what we may think, and I've been a great critic of Mr. Obama, but in the primaries, and I still have reservations about trusting him fully, but at the same time, I'm seeing a man of action, and I'm seeing a man of seeming integrity. Now, seeing a person who's vision has brought him to the highest office in the land. And that's an achievement. And he did all of that within, a few years? Less than 6 years. So, from there, we're going to, I want to continue here. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. But I have a little wandering here. The spirit of elements strive toward union with man. They undergo the development of consciousness in lower forms of elements, and rarely possible are cases of their growth up to the consciousness of man. Man, however, in an extraordinary case, can bypass the whole planet. But of course, in strict clarification, one may place the bulk of the elemental spirit upon the primary forms. You know how varied are the evolutions. The standing should be expanded. The understanding should be expanded. And one can devote a special discourse to the elements. This domain is very beautiful. And the path of construction is absorbing. But it can be vouched that the steps of self-denial will also bring joy. Precisely the beauty of cosmos brings selflessness closer to the consciousness. The feeling of cosmic loneliness is but the realization of direct paths, as only in this consciousness can man fly into other worlds, helping others for their sake alone. Let whirlwinds and waterspouts darken the air. Amidst their dust gleams and silver and generative silver, which spiritualizes the color of earth. During the pressure of turmoil, distressful moments can occur. Because the eruption of a whole part of the world is a mighty volcano. Since ancient times, people have been advised by the hour of turmoil to repeat a short invocation by rhythmic repetitions to repulse the waves of influences. Later, these measures deteriorated into the senseless repetition of religious words. Nevertheless, the principle remains sound. Sometimes our spirit demands certain reiterations of enumerations. During the best periods of priesthood's reign, his chosen words were Adonai, Ishtar, Alleluia, and Am. Also, the repetition of the alphabet or of figures was in use. Of course, actually, the power is not in the words themselves, but in the creation of the waves. The fact is that sometimes, through the invocation of the spirit, a useful wave can be created. But habits are like numbness, under which even a powerful remedy ceases to act. Sometimes during vortices, one can create one's own purifying wave. When a poisonous breath is about to touch one, it is best to exhale. Likewise, one can create by willpower a protecting veil. During the mystery rites, the priestesses were so deeply enwrapped in an almost invisible veil that they ceased to hear and to see, as if the thread of existence had been severed. It was a kind of purification in an atmosphere full of turmoil. I am reminding you about the mystery of the protective wave because it had its origin in Asia. Humanity is in need of new waves, and the window into the astral world must be open, and the wise one feels cold upon the blasted earth. Wow. I can identify with that today. It was 10 degrees this morning, and yesterday it was below zero. But humanity is in need of new waves. And the window into the astral world must be open. The wise one feels cold on the blasted earth. I have said, I say, and I will say, help build my country. And remember this, our request, not in warmth and abundance, but in the cold and in the moments of hardship. It has been told that there will be instances require courage, that there will be sharp precipices which can be crossed only in the name of the teacher. We will say, it is warm by the fire. You will answer, I hasten into the cold. They will say, fine is the fur coat. You will answer, too long for walking. They will say, close the eyes. You will answer, forbidden on watch. You can cross the bridge with invincible strength, and at the moment of weariness, remember, Our request for the plan is as beautiful as the radiance of elements. So in other words, don't be held back by physical comforts, by cries of your children or your family or whatever. Don't be afraid to enter the astral world. I mean, you're still there. You're still here in the physical place, but take that time to yourself and search for the, and look deep into yourself and find that way to separate your mind from your body, your spirit from your body, rather, and elevate into that astral plane where you can travel endlessly throughout the universe and come right back when your time is up or when you need to come back, if you feel the need to come back. But this is what you do. This is how you do it, and this is what it's done. You know, this is what they're saying. Don't be afraid. Don't be held back. And the elements are spatial substance, imponderable and immeasurable, semi-amorphous crystals in the aspect of the so-called elemental manifestations. The essence of the unmanifested spirit permeates the substance of space. It is said of man that he is born and he dies. About the elemental spirit, it can be said that it flashes and becomes extinct. Like an arrow, the consciousness of the manifested spirit pierces into the substance of elements, and like a magnet, it gathers the molten substance. The birth of an elemental spirit is conditioned by the contact of a manifested consciousness. Verily, boundless is cooperation. The quality, appearance, and dynamic force of the spirit depends upon the spirit of the Creator. Therefore, evil thinking is condemned by the begetter of monstrosity. The force of consciousness produces a corresponding reflex in the substance of space, and the flared-up focuses of space remain close to him who create them. A mediocre consciousness will beget easily in this inextinguishable sparks, but a potentially growing consciousness can create giants. It is a factory of good and evil, therefore the quality of thought is so important. Thus we have hewed out a picture of the evolution of life of the space, and we can urge humanity to do better and not to besmirch the waves of the beautiful light. The spheres of the elements are of dazzling beauty, and besmirching them is like destroying a wonderful flower. I feel that the teaching of pure thought will permeate, or rather penetrate, into the space, pierced by the combinations of new rays, and permits the beginning of the new era. All good should be gathered. The Blessed One told this parable about the wheel of the law. To a skillful scribe, there came an honorable man, who commissioned him to copy on an ample parchment. The man supplied an appeal to the Lord. Immediately afterward, a man came with a request to copy a letter full of threats, and he also provided a parchment, urging that the work be finished quickly. In order to give this letter priority, the copyist changed the sequence and hurried with the second order, taking up the parchment of the first man in haste. And he of the threats was very pleased and rushed away to pour out his venom. Then the first customer returned, and looking at the parchment, said, "Where is the parchment I gave you?" And on hearing what had occurred, he said, "The parchment for the prayers bore the blessing of fulfillment, whereas the parchment of threats was devoid of effectiveness. Unfaithful man, in violating the law of dates, you have bereft of its power a prayer which could have aided the sick. But besides this, you have brought into fulfillment threats which are full of unparalleled consequences. The labor of the Arhat in blessing my parchment is wasted. Wasted is the labor of the Arhat who stripped evil of its power. You have loosed upon the world a malicious curse which will inevitably react upon you yourself. You have pushed from the path the wheel of the law so that it will not lead you onward but will break your way. Do not write laws upon a dead parchment which may be carried away by the first thief. Bear the laws in spirit and the breath of benevolence will carry before you the wheel of the law, illuminating your path. Such unreliability as that of the scribe may bring catastrophe upon the whole world. My ray manifests the sign of spirit and presages a fierce battle. One may conceive the new world as the destiny of the spirit. It may be recognized according to the importance of knowledge. And the spring of the spirit brings health. The years fly, carrying to the spirit a foothold. The spirit summons and transforms the sign of priesthood into spiritual wonderment before the destiny of man. Friends, place four stones into the foundation of your action. First, reverence of hierarchy. Second, realization of unity. Third, realization of co-measurement. And fourth, the application of the canon by thy God. By the affirmation of the first, evoke all your love. Recall from your childhood the best smiles, the brightest rays of the sun, and the first song of the birds beneath the window. From the second, gird yourselves in the armor of the day. Take up the weapons of your action and refresh your perception by a draught of cooling water. And for the third, select in your workroom the longest vertical line and call it the dimensional scale of the plan. And apply mentally all discontents, irritations, and fatigues to the scale of the world plan. And upon comparing, you will find even the smallest place for illusionary moods. For the fourth, picture yourself all the boundless of the stellar universe. Verily, our Father has made abodes. Which of them shall be stained? Recalling the given canon, inscribe, imagine that are out of a cold house you are coming into the night. Thus all that you need will come to you. Inscribe upon the first stone a dove, upon the second a warrior, and upon the third a pillar, upon the fourth the sun. Is best this, you may have noted in my words cryptic passages or separate words not clear for today. Well, remember, guidance is on condition that karma be not infringed upon. The understanding of good must prompt one how to put milestones along the road. It is best to strive onward. Everyone has his own path. It is useful to attune the organism for receptivity to the teacher's teaching. Our ray is working constantly, but concentration of the spirit is necessary. It is best to seek the teacher's indication in various manifestations of life. It is good to be able to pray. Prayer or a spiritual communion is the knowledge of communion is dangerous. Is the highest manifestation, but for this, mental refinement and spiritual strength are indispensable. The knowledge of communion is dangerous and can involve the weakening of the organism, like narcotics. People often lack discipline of spirit and sense of co-measurement. The key to the next attainment is the most difficult step on the path. Therefore, many beginners consider the light of the adept like gallery slavery. Not a flattering opinion, but I prefer the austerity of the spirit's drive. The despair of the spiritual emptiness before the anointing was well known to the initiates into the mysteries of Isis. On the night of the appointment, the neophyte was locked into his special chamber where he emptied the full chalice of despair and rent his garments, enduring a mortal anguish in spirit. Before dawn, he sank into a stupor, and at daybreak, when the sun illumined the pylons of the temple and the priest intoned the morning prayer, the high priest unlocked the door, awakened the neophyte, and led him into a dazzling hall where he received his new name and was reborn in exaltation of the spirit. Wow. Many years ago, I can't say that a lot long ago, probably 12 years ago, possibly now. Probably about 12 years ago. In 97 or 98, I recall a vision that I had. I had a number of visions at that point, very prominent visions, very, very memorable visions. I had been studying my indigenous heritage. I'm part Indian, as I found, and I began to study some of the indigenous prophecies and some of the indigenous meditations, and how American Indians, North American Indians, had achieved their visions, and they're on vision quests that they went on, and they found that their visions were, these were incredibly important, and chiefs would go on these into these sweat lodges and spend days in these lodges to purify their bodies, but also to purify their minds and to have these visions of how to lead their families, how to lead their tribes, or even how to lead their own lives, individuals' lives. People would strive for these vision quests. And not that I went into a sweat lodge or anything, but you don't really need those props, if you will. But all you need is the idea stimulated by a teacher. And the teacher could be a book, could be a wise man, could be a friend, could be an enemy, believe it or not. But it could be your teacher could be a moment of grief, a great grief, or it could be a moment of great joy, or it could be an experience of something, of destitution or homelessness. It could be a revelation of wealth or success. It could, these teachings are these teachers, I should say, are our experiences. Well, anyway, to get back to the indigenous, I only have a few minutes, or 1 minute. That vision that I saw was actually this great hall that they speak of. And in that great hall were so many spiritual dignitaries that came before me and greeted me with great enthusiasm and told me their names. And it was a marvelous experience. It lasted all of an hour or more. And I was allowed to write it down. I was told to transcribe this experience and these people and these spirits. And each individual spirit introduced himself to me in this remarkable hall. And it was a remarkable vision. And like I said, though I was conscious, I was actually semi-conscious, but I could still write and create. I could still write what they told me to write down, and I did. And which I have somewhere to this day. I haven't referred to it in many years, but I know that I've kept those channelings. So, but anyway, regardless, and I know the show is now over, but you can catch the rest in the archives. But I want to say that we all have these visions, but some can be so intense that they can affect the rest of our lives. And they're not, and they come to us when we're ready for them, not before usually. And sometimes when we're not ready for them, we ignore them as dreams, or we don't call upon the spirits to guide us to the understanding of the visions. So in this incident, I had that vision. And I had a number of different visions, which I'll speak about possibly in other programs. But that particular vision was so remarkable, and I can remember now the height of that hallway, of that hall, that grand hall, that the ceiling height was, I don't know, just hundreds of feet tall. Just they spiraled. They just are immense, and they were, and at the very top there was a great light flowing in, like an unnatural light, but almost like sun going greater, softer than sunlight, but yet just as intense. Flooding the entire hallway, almost as though it was, each spirit was radiating, you know, thousands of watts of light, you know. But yet, they were all smiling, they were all happy, they were all beautiful. And they were all spirit, as was I. But at the same time, I, being there, knew I was in spirit form. I had transformed into that spirit form. And at the same time, I was, oddly enough, transcribing every word that was being said to me in the hall by the different people that were greeting me, with great smiles and introducing me to others and great things. And it was such an intense moment, a vision, that I felt, and I was told that I could visit them at any time, and that I should visit them whenever I felt, and if ever I needed their guidance, or if ever I needed if ever I had a question, or if there was anything they could do for me, that I knew the way, and I never really forgot the way, but oddly enough, I only went back there a few different times. And then I had other visions that were so far more sensual and exotic that with other spirits that ruled this earth that I was drawn to. And it just had so many experiences like this in that time period. During the 90s, the late 90s, it was a transitional period in my life. But, and I wasn't under hallucinogenics, I wasn't under drugs other than a few, you know, than the normal cigarettes and a couple of drinks here and there, but there wasn't any intense hallucinogenics or anything like that. This was intense meditation, study, and an awareness. And what created itself was why I had those visions was is a topic of another program, and but just to know that we can automatically go to the astral plane. We're welcome there, but we have to be able to be of that nature in order to be welcome there. We have to be grateful to be there. We have to be peaceful, and when we arrive, we have to be friendly. We have to be members of the brotherhood, if you will, of kind, good spirits, and those who seem to be the overlords, if you will, of our planet, the watchers of our planet, the caretakers of our planet. They're concerned with our environment. They're concerned with our mental and physical conditions. They're concerned with so many things. And they are the givers. They are the kindly spirits that give us all the knowledge that we have. And then there are those on the other end. And these are the top, these are the ones that say, these are those that are, they're kind of lost spirits, and they have their own community. But they live within a sensual realm, a third a realm, a non a shadowy type of realm, a sensual realm, a physical realm. But they are still spirits, and they can come into natural forms. They have the ability to come back into. But the spirits on the higher level that I've experienced. These are people that are don't wish to come back into the earthly form. They only wish to communicate with us and bring us higher. And these are the people that will instruct us or do instruct us into the process of ascension. As the other spirits are those who, though they're friendly, and many are fun, many are humorous, many are... like us, but they want us to stay. They want us to stay in this dimension, and they want us to help. They want to help us to some degree, but they want to help us stay here and be better here. But that is not our. That's not us. We are to move on. We have to go to that other realm and then beyond that, because I've been told in other visions from these spirits that we have a higher place to go. We must go even further than they are whenever we're ready on this journey. And I've probably said enough, and I've probably said too much. I probably think, wow, this guy is out of his mind. But no, I'm not. And I've been there, and I know I've been there, and I've come back, and I'm living a normal life, and I'm not, I'm no crazier than anybody else. But I'm daring enough to say that these things happened to me. These experiences did happen to me. These visions have been there, and are there whenever I wish them to be again. And the ability to travel into the astral plane. Everyone has that ability. They just need to continue to read further to understand how to get there. And I wish you a good evening. I hope everybody enjoyed the show. I did. Kind of did some astral planing there while I was talking to you. And revisiting the vision I hadn't for some time, gone back there. So I want to thank you all for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, I hope you tell others. I wish you have a pleasant evening. Good night.